CES, formerly known as the Consumer Electronics Show, is this week. And although the show is virtual, Automotive News is still covering it from every angle. Instead of regular Daily Drive episodes, we're bringing you special coverage of CES with daily episodes of our Shift podcast. Shift is a weekly podcast from Automotive News focused on all things mobility. New technology, new business models, new innovations. You can subscribe to Shift at autonews.com/shiftpodcast. Daily Drive episodes will return on Friday.
Shift is brought to you by Ricardo North America, a subsidiary of the Ricardo Group, a global engineering and environmental consultancy specializing in advanced propulsion, software, controls, and vehicle systems integration.
Hi, everybody. Welcome to Shift, a podcast about mobility. I'm Pete Bigelow, your host and reporter at the Automotive News.
Hi, everybody. It's Leslie Allen, editor of Shift Magazine.
And it's Alexa St. John, reporting on tech and suppliers.
Joining us today on the podcast is Gary Shapiro, the president and CEO of the Consumer Technology Association, which is responsible for putting on CES. Leslie, what do you think about this virtual version of our annual technology showcase?
This will be quite a test of the virtual format for any conference. I mean, CES is obviously not some minor event. This is the largest technology show perhaps in the world. I mean, somebody correct me if I'm wrong. There might be some larger ones in Asia or something like that. And to see it go virtual, that will be quite a test to see how well they'll be able to pull this off with the assistance of Microsoft, from what I understand now. Now, Alexa, Microsoft is not just serving as the platform provider, but isn't that the venue from which we're going to be seeing Gary during the show?
Yes, Leslie, that's right. Gary will not be in Las Vegas, of course. No one will be, but instead, he'll be at Microsoft's headquarters in Redmond, Washington. So that's kind of an interesting change of pace for him. And, you know, I mean, it's just been interesting over the last few weeks to kind of hear about the last minute planning and such that's all going into this virtual show. I know Gary said it's certainly a challenge to adapt to something that's entirely digital. I mean, we're used to just these massive displays, in the Las Vegas Convention Center and all around, you know, the parking lots and various hotels in Vegas. But, you know, companies really had to get creative here in terms of adapting their content to a user experience that's just entirely over a screen. I mean, that's a lot to take on.
Yeah, Alexa, like I will confess that I am not as fired up for the virtual version, obviously, as the show, which is strange in some fashion because I think just as much as anyone who's been to Las Vegas during CES, I like to kind of complain about the chaos and the traffic and kind of the overall enormity of the show. But here as we sit in Southeast Michigan, I am missing it a bit this year.
Yeah, this time last year we were scrambling to get to CES, probably on planes heading out to Las Vegas. And this is quite a change, but, you know, this is the new normal. Pretty remarkable that as many companies that have signed up have signed up for this program. They must feel that there's still, some benefit in reaching this tech-oriented audience. And we have some announcements that are coming out, you know, like tomorrow, for example, Mary Barra is supposed to be delivering the keynote for General Motors. And, you know, there are a few automotive exhibitors, you know, who have virtual booths this year and suppliers as well. So, you know, I think we'll get a decent show and we'll see. Maybe this time next week we'll have quite a bit to say about what we saw.
That's right, Leslie. We'll have news, obviously, from General Motors. Intel and Mobileye have some big developments to announce, as does Panasonic. Alexa, what can you tell us from the supplier front?
Well, in speaking with Gary, as well as just the suppliers that will be exhibiting, You know, I expect to hear a lot about electrification, of course, which, you know, quick plug, if you pick up or get the print version of Automotive News, we have this all previewed and more. But I also am expecting to hear a lot about sustainable mobility and sustainability, which I think, you know, is a big topic. Of course, AV developments will always get their spotlight, as is usual for CES. So those are some of the big areas. I think, you know, companies might be capitalizing on this opportunity to expand on some of the announcements they've made in recent months. We know that Magna, just a couple of weeks ago, announced their joint venture with LG for electric vehicle supplying. And so, you know, I think they'll take this opportunity to talk more about that. And so I think it'll be an interesting mix on the supplier front, at least, of breaking news, brand new announcements, as well as expanding upon recently made announcements.
One thing we should mention is that on Thursday, we're going to have our own event during CES, and we hope that you guys can check it out. It's going to be on Thursday, as I mentioned, from 1 to 5 Eastern, and it's called The Future of Mobility. Get up to speed. We have four panels that are going to be taking place. We're going to be exploring everything from the digitization of manufacturing to what's happening with EVs and logistics as it relates to autonomous vehicles, et cetera. So some pretty good speakers, as a matter of fact, John Krafcik from Waymo. We have Scott Keogh from Volkswagen. Mark Fields, the former CEO of Ford, is supposed to be part of this program as well. And you'll see some people who are involved with the administration, the Department of Transportation, et cetera. So we hope you can check that out. And that's going to be on Thursday. And there's more information available on our website.
That's right, Leslie. Anyone who's listening can register for the event at autonews.com/shiftCES, all one word on Shift CES. And we should also mention that Sharif Merakbi is also going to be part of that panel discussion, the new executive vice president from Magna, who will also be joining us on a podcast later this week. We'd be remiss if we didn't mention that we have a daily podcast this week during CES. Sharif will be one of our guests, and you know, certainly looking forward to that conversation and others. But obviously, there's a lot to know about CES, and perhaps nobody could fill us in better on the landscape of the show than Gary Shapiro himself. Without further ado, let's go to our conversation with Gary Shapiro.
Happy New Year, Gary. Thanks so much for taking the time to join us.
Oh, thank you. Happy 2021.
It's really great to chat with you right on the brink of CES. So how are you feeling about the show coming together?
You know, I'm feeling great, honestly. It's way surpassed our expectations. We were planning for about 1,000 companies exhibiting, and we're ready to cut it off about 2,000 now because we simply are at capacity. And that's doubling is not something I ever expected. You know, this is obviously, although we've been planning this for a long time, when we made that final decision in July, we had to do a lot of things, including, you know, finalize the relationship with a software vendor, and also in terms of our deal with Microsoft, they were doing something that's never been done before, and we created something unique. We didn't take an off-the-shelf package where avatars run around exhibit booths and you replicate the floor. We decided to say we're not going to have an exhibit floor, essentially. We are going to have a purely digital event. It's a once-in-a-lifetime opportunity. I hope it's once-in-a-lifetime. For 2022, we plan a hybrid event with a physical event in Las Vegas, enhanced digitally. But allowing a pure digital event gave us an opportunity to do things we've only dreamed about before. For example, we can extend the show life. So we're extending it by 30 days. So essentially, the exhibitors will be able to interact and people see exhibits for that time period. You can time shift almost anything. So all the conference sessions, keynotes, things like that, they should be available even after the show. So if you really want to see a conference, you'll be able to, and not, you know, trying to run from one hall to the other. Also, we were able to change the show dates. We shifted it a week to the further future. because we needed the time and we wanted to move away from the New Year's. That was a luxury that we'll never have again. And then, but also it gave us the opportunity to allow people to link and connect with each other. And the show's about connectivity. And I checked the numbers this week, and over 50,000 of our pre-registered attendees have given up their willing to the names to others and their interests so people could connect with them before the show and arrange a meeting time or arrange to meet in an exhibit or things like that. So it's we have our own little LinkedIn with CES. It's already proven to be successful. So I'm feeling very good about things. We have a lot of people coming. Over 100,000 people have registered, and we have great industry representation. We've gotten some phenomenal speakers. I mean, our Detroit's GM's Mary Barra is kicking us off. We're excited that she'll be talking about electrification of vehicles and other things, and we look forward to that. But we also have a very, very strong representation in many, many different vertical categories, including automobile.
Gary, I'm curious, take us back to that point in July when you had to make a decision about, you know, whether the show would kind of continue in its typical physical format or that you would go virtual. And how do you make that decision with, you know, when you're forecasting essentially with imperfect information?
Well, the truth is, on February 2nd, we had a volunteer leadership meeting in Florida. And my wife, who's a doctor, on the way to the airport, insisted I pull over and buy up some hygienic stuff because she said this virus is going to be so bad. And then she came to one of our meetings and spoke to our members and asked to speak and warned us of the situation we're in today, of that this is going to be around, it's going to be devastating, there'll be social unrest, it's going to affect the economy and the stock market, and we should be, it'll affect CES, and we should prepare for it and stop being in the Kubler stages of denial. And half the people thought she was crazy and half the people she scared. And she has been saying consistent ever since in what she's been saying about some of this. So we decided at our board meeting in March that we would go on a two-track approach, plan for a hybrid event, but also plan for a purely digital event. And by July, it became apparent to us. And again, I'm not going to lie, I get a lot of my medical advice to my wife, who's a great Detroit area doctor. And she said, there's no way there'll be a vaccine that's widely available in time for CES. And that's proven to be the case. It was obviously the right decision, and we made it so early that I think we shocked a lot of people in the event world. And it was very disappointing for people in Las Vegas, but it was clearly the right thing to do. So that in July, when our board met formally and made the final decision, in the middle of July, we announced in late July, it was something we felt the criteria we used was a very simple one. And it was, what is the right thing to do? Forget the finances and how it's going to impact us, but what's the right thing to do? And that was a unanimous, the right thing to do is to not be part of the problem, but to be part of the solution to the virus. And the solution is not to have a big event with a lot of people and you don't know what their background, coming from all over the world. And also the anxiety we were already getting and hearing about from companies that were exhibiting or speaking or even attending their employees and others about traveling to Las Vegas in January. It was building up by July to the point we could really hear it. And we just said, we have to just do the right thing here. And it was a challenging decision. There's no question. We have it's affected us financially. We've cut back on a lot of things we're doing. We've cut back on, we have 20% fewer employees now, sadly. We've tightened up a lot of things and focused our priorities, but our priority has been on, you know, providing service to the industry and also doing whatever we can about COVID. We've had a bunch of webcasts. We've worked with the White House on a website, our health technology portion of the show, and what we're doing is grown dramatically. We started a whole new effort that's across different industries and healthcare, focusing on people that are disadvantaged because of this crisis in terms of how we can make sure this doesn't happen again, the technology can be used in a positive way to deal with these crises. So the decision was ultimately an easy decision, and history has already proven to be the correct decision.
We're going to take a short break in our conversation with Gary right now for this word from our sponsor.
Transportation OEMs and Tier 1 customers count on Ricardo to deliver the next wave of cleaner, more efficient mobility and propulsion technologies. from advanced and alternative fuel internal combustion engines to electrified and autonomous vehicles for racing, digital age military, aerospace, and terrestrial transport, Ricardo's product-agnostic approach drives innovation that is fit for the future. Our customers come to Ricardo for world-class support, from staff augmentation, advanced concept ideation, production design, testing, and development, through low-volume production. In fact, Ricardo's strategic and technical consulting teams sit arm-in-arm with innovators the world over to map solutions that mitigate transportation challenges. The strength of Ricardo is rooted in our active internal research and development activities that are driving next-generation connected and autonomous vehicles, high-power-density electric inverters, high-speed transmissions, and electric drive units. We deliver much more than ideas, much more than supercomputers in a trunk. We develop solutions for efficient use of space, active management of energy, minimizing thermal impact, and, of course, managing cost of delivery. For more insights into Ricardo's depth of engineering expertise and the next wave of cleaner mobility and propulsion technology, look for a forthcoming invite to the first Ricardo Mobility Summit featuring leaders from the transportation world.
Now back to our conversation with Gary Shapiro. It's funny, like I feel like I'm used to talking to you about square footage numbers at the various halls at CES, and obviously that's not the case this year. How have companies approached the show differently? How have they shifted their plans? And tell us a little about the automotive component in particular here.
Well, you know, we planned for 1,000 companies. That was our goal, to showcase their through the internet what they were doing, and be able, you know, set up the connectivity. And honestly, we might have to cut it off now because we're close to 2,000 companies, and we feel that's our absolute capacity to be able to provide the type of service and the review that we have to do different things. We've never had to review what a company does before it goes live, but you know, we're going as we will essentially be in almost every country in the world with this internet availability. It's you know, we have to be aware of cultural sensitivities and laws in other countries, and which is a very difficult challenge that we've never experienced before. So we're very careful about who can get on and what they can show and what they can do. And that's what we're trying to do. So we've way exceeded our expectations in terms of participation. The company response has been amazing. We did, in selecting what we were doing, we really wanted to do it differently and not just have an off-the-shelf solution. So we were very careful in selecting some. Microsoft has had their own, as some other tech companies, really great presentations and you know, totally digital. So they had some experience there, but no one has ever done it with an exhibit basis. And that required a lot of preparation, required a lot of change. But the participation rate has been amazing. The auto industry has obviously stepped up big time through great integration. There's different, every level of tier of manufacturers there and service providers. We obviously went to the big kickoff from GM's Mary Barra, helps define the show in an automotive mobility way. We have speakers on self-driving. We have speakers on other things. We have all sorts of companies involved. Even, you know, a mobility company you may not think about, but Caterpillar, for example, is focusing on mobility. Bosch, obviously, is a big one. Panasonic, they're speaking about it. Virgin Hyperloop is speaking about it. Waymo, Toyota. And obviously GM. So we have so many different people speaking. And the big focus is on the exhibit side is really up to the companies themselves in terms of what they're showing. But we definitely expect a lot on electrification and self-driving.
You know, it does seem that a couple of companies have, you know, decided to opt out of this year's show and aren't necessarily planning on making any announcements. Do you worry about any impact that this might have on the auto industry interest in CES this year? Or, you know, do you expect interest still to be, you know, incredibly bullish? And how do you hope to bring back some of those companies for next year?
Well, you know, every year there's companies that go in and out of the show. That's just natural for a lot of reasons, most of them having nothing to do with the CES itself. Sometimes it's a quiet period. For financial reasons, they're looking at a merger, they're looking at, or they don't have any products to choose, they don't have anything new, or it just doesn't work for them for this year. I understand and respect that. But the auto industry participation is huge. You know, Volvo's come in, they've never been in before. That's a big deal. That's pretty important. The companies that are in and pretty excited. But, you know, sometimes the workflow of the company is such, they couldn't pivot to even deal with a digital event because it's a totally different skill set. I mean, instead of having, you know, a physical exhibit presence with everything goes with it, you have to do something totally different and imagine what you're doing. And most of the major companies are in, and a lot of other companies as well. So I feel it's a very strong category for us. It's something that's pretty important. And there'll be a lot of focus on all ranges of mobility, just not automobiles, which is makes it really more important. I mean, the value of CES, I think that a lot of people see, is that it's a cross-vertical event. So, and the auto industry especially has benefited from the fact that innovations coming from outside of the pure traditional verticals. In other words, if you are in just the auto category and you're a major company, you're looking for innovation everywhere. You're looking outside your vertical. You're looking to partner with all sorts of different technology companies. And that's the value of CES. And especially in a year, frankly, where a lot of the auto shows have just gone away or been impacted in different ways, the CES has provided an opportunity to do that. And we've used all sorts of things on our offering to allow that. So when you register for the event, if you type in you want electric cars or you're interested in automotive, you will be able to contact other people or get information pushed to you that gives you a customized experience for CES we've never been able to do before. As I said, this is totally new for us. It allows us to do things we've never done before. We're pretty excited about that. And it's so great that we're seeing so many people have already signed up to do that. And not only, I mean, over 50,000 people just giving up their name and saying what their interests are so other people can contact them, but also people on their own stating their interests so they could get the pushes. You know, that's what you do when you register. But we're also keeping it trade only. We're very careful. This isn't a public auto show. It's an industry event, cross-industry event, and it's a global event. And it's even more global now because we've looked at our pre-registration and it's 45% of the pre-registrants are from outside the United States. And that's very important also because innovation can occur anywhere in the world. And it's just, you know, it's a different type of skill set to participate. You're sitting in front of a screen. And that's something it requires different efforts. And it may be when we look at it, it's all over. It's maybe something that younger people have done or people outside our industry have done more. Well, we have a lot of evaluation and analysis to do so we could plan for 2022 and how we could do it better, who's participated, what they've done. But at this point, the level of participation is very gratifying.
Gary, I'm curious, that 45% figure, CES always strikes me as a very international show. So I'm wondering, is that on par with what the physical show has been in terms of international participation? Is it more, how does it compare?
It's definitely more. We've been in the 30s percentages in terms of international participation. To sort of be in the mid 40s is quite a jump. You know, we'll see how many actually go on because for some of those people, it's free to activate, and sometimes when it's free, it's different when you pay. And most people are paying now because the free period is over. That they're more likely to come, but we'll have a lot of analysis to do when this is over. But the important thing is, you know, this is the opportunity to open the show to anyone in the world who is connected to the industry, who really is interested in doing it. We have to qualify everyone that tries to pre-register that as being a legitimate part of the industry, because that registration gives you the opportunity to contact people and require, you know, we want to make sure this is not just, you know, a consumer in the sense kicking the tires, with people with legitimate business interests. Although the crowd is so large and so influential in technology that it may be some companies just want to deal with these people who are influencers who go to the show, especially with a physical CES where, you know, if you're flying to Las Vegas from somewhere else in the world, that means you're probably pretty serious about being part of the industry and the technology that's there.
Gary, if I have it right, speaking of things that have never been done before and are unprecedented, you will not be in Las Vegas for the show as usual. Where will you run the show from?
Well, a bunch of us will be in Redmond, Washington, the headquarters of Microsoft, our partner in this unique venture. They have a full production studio there. We have an anchor desk with four professional anchors that are connected to the technology industry. We'll also be doing a lot of interviews there. I'll be even conducting some interviews. I'll be on the other side of the table speaking to people like Mark Cuban and others, asking them about what they're doing, government officials, ministers from around the world, even royalty from the Netherlands. We have a whole bunch of very exciting things lined up throughout the show, and we'll be there. So we decided it's actually a little unusual for us because we haven't been that physically together either. I have been to Redmond, Washington a few weeks ago to do some of the pre-production work, and I'm very impressed with what Microsoft has created. We decided to go to Microsoft because they're so experienced in this area, but they also have cloud computing, they have cybersecurity, they have production, and they have Microsoft Teams, and they've done their own events. So this is, we're working with professionals. We knew this was outside our comfort zone, and we had to partner to do something that was a breakaway and successful, push the envelope. And we know we're going to fail in many ways. I can't tell you which yet, but things will go wrong and we'll learn and we'll do it better next year when we have hopefully a hybrid event with Las Vegas, but also keep the best of the digital. We also, our philosophy was that we were not going to do everything. We weren't going to do AR or VR or bells and whistles. We were going to do a few things very well. And that's what our goal has been. We want a good search engine. We want connectivity. We want people to have a personalized experience. We want to do things absolutely right in a way that makes sense and has everyone that's investing have a productive, valuable experience.
Gary, since COVID really began, I mean, it seems like every major event has turned virtual in some fashion. And, you know, we're hearing the word Zoom fatigue, and that's something we probably would have never really heard before this whole crisis, you know, but I'm wondering with all of these different virtual events and announcements, is there any sense of competition or is there a place and more importantly, the demand for all of these things in the automotive ecosystem? And, you know, with that, I'm wondering what sort of precedent you hope to set for the rest of the year's auto shows and automotive related events, based from virtual CES.
Well, certainly, I don't feel a competition. What I think is we are owned by the industry, including the auto industry. And they were asking for us to go forward, but we've made some major changes. Obviously, it's not only going digital, it's what we did. As I said, we invested significantly in creating a unique platform that was responsive to what our customers wanted. But we also use best practices that other events have learned. And you mentioned Zoom fatigue. We have cut down the length of virtually every session. We've asked for, you know, we have high quality production. We're investing in heavily, so it's good with professional anchors. We also are giving companies an opportunity to showcase themselves. And those, there are spotlight sessions, which are actually live product demos, part of the exhibitor showcase. Exhibitors are doing some, in a sense, them very well-executed press conferences, but also many of them are offering opportunities for question and answers during media day. And, of course, it's the opportunity to talk with exhibitors if you're a qualified attendee, and meetings can be set up. So we broke away from what's been out there with, you know, literally hundreds of off-the-shelf platforms that people are trying to sell us, and we said, let's create something that's worthy of our audience and invest heavily in it, you know, because it's important that we do this right. The auto industry needs an opportunity to talk to each other and to reach the media. And I think they've been exemplary in how they've used even their own events. And they've had to learn how to do it as well. But it's definitely a way of doing it. But you're still dealing with a two-dimensional screen trying to convey three-dimension and emotion and passion and beauty and innovation and joy. And it's a challenge. It's not – there's no substitute for being – human to human event. And this episode in human history of COVID, that none of us have experienced in our lifetimes anything like it before, is for all, I think every CEO I've talked to has agreed that it's made us realize how human we are, and we crave and we need it, and we're missing a lot by not being together. So in the future of live interactive events, I believe in totally 100%. You know, there'll be some hiccups and maybe it'll be slow to come back. But it will come back because we need that. We need to walk around and see and feel. We need that discovery that you can't get fully on a computer, although we've tried everything we could to allow serendipity. But most significantly, you need that human touch. You need the body language, the signals. You need the hugs and handshakes. I don't know if that'll come back in 2022, but eventually I hope it does. You know, you need those relationships, the look in the eye, need the smell of that new car experience. So while business has gone on and technology has been a lifesaver in this time period, and I'm very proud of what the tech industry has done, we need those events. And what we've also seen because of COVID is the needs have changed. The type of car people are buying, what they're looking for is slowly changing. Where they're living is changing. The cities, you know, may take a hit. Travel actually might get better. There's a recent report that's come out that commuting times are going to be much less for the next several years because there's so many people working from home. That has a positive impact on driving. But on the other hand, maybe you don't need a car if you're working from home. So there's a lot of impacts on the transportation world that come out of COVID that are still being felt. But I think in the long run, it'll be positive. And there's opportunities that are there that you see at CES. Take healthcare, where technology is huge. Well, that relates to the car. If you could get into a car and it could tell you that you're likely to be sick soon unless you take certain actions, that's great. The impetus for self-driving because of COVID is become more important. You know, maybe some people just feel uncomfortable with an unknown person driving their car. And although some of the services like Uber and Lyft have allowed them to live maybe anywhere without a car, maybe they're thinking of buying a car now because of COVID. They may want a self-driving car, they may want their own car. So that what's happened in this 1 year since CES 2020 is so dramatic and so changing in so many ways that events like ours give an opportunity for people to come together. The auto industry still needs information. They need relationships. They need context. They need serendipity. They need to understand whether they can trust a vendor or not. We're still going to be traveling around the world eventually. We'll get back to it. And part of that is having meetings, conventions, trade shows, auto shows. I'm pretty bullish about the future of events in the long term because this has shown that we just need each other really badly. As I said, every CEO feels they're missing that human touch. They're missing getting full information. They're missing the context. They're missing their own discovery. And its impact on innovation. It's forced innovation to accelerate in the digital shift, but it's also been an impact on creativity and getting things done in most businesses in America. So I think humans still need humans and will want to be with other humans. Bottom line.
Gary, I have found myself saying, to many people, and I'm sure you've heard others say this, like, you know, as overwhelming as CES can be sometimes, I have said to many people, like, I'm going to miss it this year. I'm kind of feeling that void. And I think it speaks to what you're saying, that we kind of need to be in person together ultimately. So I'm wondering maybe a good way to close this out as our time runs short here is looking ahead to 2022. And you've mentioned some aspects of what you're planning, a year out. I've got a question about the show's logistics. We hear a lot about the boring companies work around the convention center. I've heard a little bit about the Las Vegas monorail bankruptcy. So as we talk about all the transportation technology we see at the show, can you fill us in a little bit on what it's going to be like to move about the show once we're back in person, hopefully a year from now?
So CES 2022, hopefully physical events supplemented by digital, will be back in Las Vegas. There's a whole new facility there, which was supposed to be open in January for us, and it is ready for us, but COVID is not ready for it. So we will be there. It's already sold out pretty much. We've already sold a lot of the exhibit space for the show. The participation of companies, especially auto companies, has been very, very strong, even though we're 12 months out. We started a couple months ago, and we have a floor plan. There is this underground tunnel, sadly named the Boring Tunnel, Elon Musk. They created that at the convention center to help people move from one area to another. And it's so successful that they're building another one. The Metrorail system had some financial issues, but it looks like it's going to be taken over essentially by the government and still be operating. Some of the hotels, they're still going forward with construction and new things. And Las Vegas has more hotels than any city in the Americas. And they're great hotels, great restaurants. They are ready for us to come back. And that was the most difficult thing about the decision, honestly. It was disappointing our friends in Las Vegas who were, thought that the 2021 would be the beginning of a return to normalcy. And I'm looking forward to other shows opening in Las Vegas before we do, frankly, because there's a lot of things to work out physically. It won't look like the CES 2020 show not only because of the new facilities and some of the other things going on there, but also because of the hygienic measures that I'm sure that we'll be taking and others are exploring, but the best ways to keep people safe and to figure out who's vaccinated and who has had it and how to treat people and whether or not you wear a mask. These are decisions that we have not luckily had to make yet, although we were looking at them in February and March and April. We've stopped looking at them for a while, and we will get back to that once we complete CES 2021. So Las Vegas still has, you know, one of the best airports in the world, definitely the best entertainment, great whole environment that people want to go to. And I think that's something that people will be dying to return to. I know a lot of people I just read a report that people are lining up their travel for 2021 all around the world because people want to get out there. And then, of course, there'll be some people who say, I'll never fly again. I'll never leave my house. I'll never do this. We faced the same thing after September 11th, 2001. You know, it did take a hit. I remember CES went down 30% in terms of attendance in that January after that horrible September 11th. But look, we grew bigger and bigger. And, you know, you can't totally predict the future because there are unforeseen things that happen. But I'm pretty confident that we will have an amazing event in 2021, a very different event in 2022. And by 2023, you know, we should be back somewhere close to where we were by most measures.
Well, Gary, that's all really great to hear. And, you know, we appreciate you joining us on the podcast, knowing that your schedule, I'm sure, is very, very busy. And you're looking forward to one of the biggest weeks of the year here.
Well, great. Well, thanks. I love what you guys do. Keep up the great coverage. What you do is so important to the auto industry. And you have a lot of loyal followers.
It's always great to hear from Gary Shapiro from Consumer Technology Association. Thank you so much, Gary. Alexa, let's chat a little bit about what's coming up later this week.
Well, I'm excited for our lineup. We are doing daily CES podcasts through Thursday. We'll be hearing from Scott Kirchner of Panasonic Automotive, Sharif Marakbi of Magna, and Glenn DeVos from Aptiv. So hopefully everyone listening today, check back later this week to hear those other podcasts and other great conversations about the show.
That is it for today. Listeners who are looking for more information on the show can find our entire preview section online at autonews.com. As Alexa mentioned, we'll have podcasts all week long, but thank you for listening today, and we will be back tomorrow with more.